Nehemiah, the fourth chapter. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. And he spake before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, what do these feeble Jews, will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heap of the rubbish which are burned? Now Tobiah the Ammonite was by him, and he said, even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall. Hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them for a prey in the hand of captivity. And cover not their iniquity, and let not their sin be blotted out from before thee. For they have provoked thee to anger before the builders. So build we the wall, and all the wall was joined together under the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth and conspired also, all of them, together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our God and set a watch against them day and night because of them. And Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall. And our adversaries said, they shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst among them, and slay them, and cause the work to cease. And it came to pass that when the Jews, which dwelt by them, came, they said unto us 10 times, from all places, when she shall return unto us, they will be upon you. Therefore said I, in the lower places, behind the wall, and on the high places, I even set the people after their families with their swords and their spears and their bows. I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your houses. And it came to pass when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, every one unto his work. And it came to pass from that time forth that the half of my servants wrought in the work, and the other half of them helped both the shields and the bows. And the Habergim and the rulers were behind all the house of Judah, they which builded on the wall, and they that bear burdens, with those that laded every one with one of his hands wrought in the work, and with the other hand held a weapon. For the builders, every one had his sword girded by his side, and so builded. And he that sounded the trumpet was by me. And I said unto the nobles, and to the rulers, and to the rest of the people, the work is great and large, and we are separated upon the wall, one far from another. In what place, therefore, ye hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye thither unto us. Our God shall fight for us. So we labored in the work, and half of them helped the spear from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. Likewise, at the same time said I unto the people, let every one with his servant lodge within Jerusalem, that in the night they may be a guard to us and labor on the day. So neither I nor my brethren, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard which followed me, none of us put off our clothes, saving that every one put them off for washing. Now, I didn't have any plans to read this, It wasn't my plan to read this. I just opened my Bible like I always do, and that's where he put it. Now I believe in my heart, this is my conviction, and some of you understand my conviction, because I've tried to share it with you from the pulpit, I've tried to talk confidentially with you, but this is my conviction, that everything, no matter what it is, concerning God, concerning the world, or concerning life in general, that everything summed up in a nutshell is one thing, that is a state of mind. That's what it is. It is a state of mind, Brother Lyman, that we get in that determines our life and determines what we are to be, whether in this present life or in the world to come. I believe that we are to be in a state of mind at all time that will please God. That's what I believe. I believe that we are to bring every thought into subjection and to the obedience of Christ. I believe that God expects us to take every thought that comes to our mind, to analyze it, and either accept it or reject it. Do away with it. And I believe that any carnal thought, a lot of people would say, well, Brother Pike, when corrupt thoughts come to my mind, I do away with them. But I believe that any carnal thought, it doesn't have to be what you term as a corrupt thought, but any carnal thought that comes to your mind that is not the mind of Christ, I believe you've got to do away with it. That's what I believe. I believe that we cannot lean to our own understanding. We cannot reason in our own reasoning. We cannot seek our own knowledge. But we are bought with a price and we belong to God. And in that we are bought with a price, and God expects us to obey Him and to give our bodies a living sacrifice, holy, not partially, but holy and acceptable unto God, which is our reasonable service. It's like the chief of police up here. That chief of police, I wouldn't be surprised at anything he would say, because he is a natural person, he is carnally minded, he doesn't know God, and all he knows is to make his money and spend his money on his belly. The Bible said his belly craves it of him. I'd rather give $1,000 a year to God than to feed my belly with it, because at the end of the year, all you got is a fat belly. But I thank God for people that understand, that have spiritual minds and know what we're trying to do, that do not begrudge what they give to God. They're not sorry of the time they invested of God. They're not sorry of the dollars that they invested in God. They're not sorry for the wounds and the scars and the battles that they, or the things they got from battle. They're not sorry for those things because they did it for God. Not sorry because they got a blemish on their name, their good name, if it was for Christ, or doing something for some poor person or some needy person, but they're glad to surrender. There are some people in the world that they're not glad to surrender anything, whether it's their finance or their name or whatever, they're not glad to surrender anything. But Jesus surrendered his life. Men of old not only surrendered something that might have hurt them a little bit, but they surrendered their wives, they surrendered their children, they surrendered everything. You know why? Because they had a surrendered mind to start with. They had a surrendered mind. The men that built these walls back had a mind to work. They had a mind to work. Now, I made the statement yesterday, it's not hard to get a mind to work if there's going to be a lot of money involved in it. If you can make a lot of money, go out here in the world and make a lot of money, you're not going to have too hard a time getting a mind to work, because your wife's going to help you make it up. That's right. And the kiddies are going to help you make it up. They're going to stand with you. But you just get a mind to do something for God. You get a mind to work for God and see if the kiddies don't cross you. And see if the wife don't cross you up. And see if your old flesh don't cross you up. And see if your relatives and friends and your debtors and everybody crosses you up. Just try to get a mind to work for God. It'll talk you out of it. But these fellows had a mind to work. They didn't mind getting on the end of a pick. They didn't mind getting on the end of a shovel. They didn't mind getting on the end of a trowel. They didn't mind getting on the end of a sword. A lot of people feel like if you ever pick up a sword, you're backslid. But Jesus popped the whip in the temple and he still had good old time salvation. Nehemiah, these fellas dipped their sword in some of them's blood, but they still had good old time salvation. I want you to know something, that one day Christians are literally going to dip their sword in the blood of human beings. And when they get through, they're still going to be good old time Christians. A lot of people get the idea because we are meek, humble, God-loving, and God-fearing people and don't mess with anybody and try to mind our own business, that that's the only way you can get to heaven. But God has just got a little season to show the world His grace, His lamb-like nature, and His love and His dove-like ways. And then after that, God's going to become a blaze of fire within the saints of God, and they're going to see the other side of God, and God's going to reveal to them not a lamb nature, but a lion nature, and He's going to reveal to them that He is the Lion of the tribe of Judah. He's coming. They've seen one side of Him. Won't be long before they'll see the other side, and they'll see it through the saints of God, a vesture dipped in blood. Revelation 19, when they come back with the white robes, the Bible teaches that He Himself will lead them. And that same tender, loving Jesus that stretched out His hands at Calvary and let them pluck His beard and do Him anyway, that same Jesus will take a sword and slay the thousands of them. That same Son of David, that power of warring with the enemy that was in David, that same power of war is in the Son of David, which is Jesus Christ, and the Bible said He's mighty in battle. So we just have to have the right kind of mind. Right now we're supposed to have a mind of meekness, a mind of gentleness, a mind of love, a mind of understanding, a mind to withdraw from the enemy. We're supposed to be the kind of person that doesn't start trouble and cause people to miss the mark in God. Not to trouble our neighbors, not to trouble our friends. Love worketh no ill to its neighbor. I'm always reminding the brethren down here that they are not to be chanting around and saying things and hollering out loud after dark down here, because it'll trouble our neighbors. And the Bible said love worketh no ill to its neighbor. I ask them at night when we're leaving service, if we're a little bit late, not to be chanting and making a lot of noise, because we don't want to do that. That's wrong. It's wrong to trouble your neighbor. You're supposed to dwell in peace with your neighbor. You say, what do you mean, Brother Pike? I mean that we're supposed to have a mind of peace, a mind of meekness, a mind of love, a mind of understanding, a mind that's willing to give in so that our neighbor can push right on over us if that's what it takes. And God has got a stopping place for him. God's got a place where he'll stop him. He'll let him go so far and then he'll stop him. If your children rise up and won't listen at you and won't listen at me, God will bear with them for a while, but he's got a stopping place. The same way with the ladies, if they get rowdy and they get indecent, or they get to where they won't listen to their husbands, God will let them go for a while because he's long-suffering. But he's got a stopping place for them. He'll stop them down the road. If a man gets to where he beats his wife and knocks her down and mistreats her and slapping her around, God's got a stopping place for him. God let him go so far, and after a while, God will put a stop to him. So then, having the right frame of mind, being in the right state of mind,
The victory can be yours. This is the victory that overcometh the world, even your faith. And that faith is a development from the mind of Jesus Christ. Contend for the faith that was once delivered unto the saints of God. You can be an overcomer, you can be victorious, and you can be God's man or God's woman if you'll have the right frame of mind. But I will tell you this, it doesn't matter who you are, how cute you think you are, or whatever you believe you are, man or woman, if you don't have the right frame of mind, you are an abomination in the sight of God. He doesn't go by appearance. Man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. And I want you to know that if you don't get the right frame of mind, then God will frown on you. You won't amount to anything in God. It takes the right frame of mind. If you've got a mind to steal somebody else's husband, you've got a mind to steal somebody else's wife, you got a mind to defile somebody else's daughter or some take advantage of some other son, if you've got a mind to cheat God and to swindle, to be degraded, to think corruption, my brother, that's all you are. As a man thinketh in his heart, so he is. That's all you are. That's what you'll be rewarded for. God will feed you the fruits of your thoughts. But if you've got a mind to love with all godliness, with all pureness, a mind to swear to your own hurt, a mind to give to God, a mind to help your neighbor, a mind to be sacrificed on the altars of the feelings of others, a mind to try to do something for God, to fast, to pray, to work, to come and help your brethren when they've got need, to stand with them, a mind to submit to the ministry, a mind to surrender your body and your life and your heart and all that you are to the ministry and to your fellow man. If you've got that kind of mind, then you're in good shape. You're in good shape because from that kind of mind comes a clear conscience. And from that kind of conscience comes faith in God. And from that kind of faith comes everything that heart could wish for, whether it's eternal substance or whether it's temporal substance. I want to say this today. I made the statement yesterday while we was trying to help the men a little. Getting a lot of knowledge is never going to solve the problem. Learning a lot about different things is never going to make you a Christian or a man of God. You can study and learn from now on, but it won't do you any good because God is not a derivative of knowledge. He doesn't come from knowledge. God comes from real godly character and real charity down in the heart. Charity edifies and knowledge puffeth up. I made the statement yesterday. I was asked concerning knowledge. I've never had a man that ever had knowledge but what he wasn't a thorn in my flesh. Find a man with knowledge, he's always a thorn in my flesh. You say, why would that be, Brother Pye? Because a man with knowledge will always have his own ideas about it. He'll want to do his own thing and he want to tell everybody else the way that he sees it and the way that he feels that it ought to be run, and he's a thorn in your flesh. Paul had a lot of knowledge. Paul the apostle spent all of his time learning and he became a thorn in the flesh of Jesus Christ. He persecuted and wasted the church because he tried to figure out what was to be done. And one day God turned him upside down or all around and told him to go over to the street called Straight and to count all that learning as dung and to get a little charity in his heart and get straightened out with God, and he'd do something for him. So then Paul did. Paul turned around, began to get with God and began to fast and pray and talk to God, forget about trying to learn so much, and got with God and got out in the desert somewhere. In about 3.5 years, God had tutored him in the revelation of Christ, and he come back with some real knowledge, not knowledge falsely so called. But he come back with a message. Now you say, what happened to him, Brother Pye? He had a change of mind. Like the little song we wrote, I've changed my mind. He had his mind changed. He had his heart changed. He got a change and he began to believe and begin to love instead of begin to try to know and rebuke. A lot of people want to know and rebuke, but you ought to try to love and try to believe. That's what you ought to try to do. When a man tries to love his enemies, love his neighbor as himself, do good to them that despitefully use him, pray for them that persecute him, and get the mind of Christ, and that man will do something for God. An old mind of suspicion. A lot of people got the gift of suspicion. They suspicion their husband. They suspicion their wife. They suspicion their daughters. They suspicion their sons. They suspicion the preacher. They suspicion everybody. Neighbors, they got a mind of suspicion. But what we need is a mind of faith, not a mind of suspicion. If we get a mind of faith, then we have confidence in the Christ that's in a person's heart. I don't have any confidence in the flesh, none. I've never met a man or woman, boy or girl, that I ever had any confidence in. I never expect to meet one. But there's one thing, you say, well, what about Jesus? He was flesh. The Bible said not to know him anymore after the flesh. So then the confidence I have is he's a quickening spirit. And all of them that are born of God, that are quickening spirits, all of them that are born of Christ, all of them that are partakers of his flesh and bone, that is the spiritual body, I've got confidence in them. I've got confidence in them. Now, we ought to have a mind to have confidence in our fellow man. We ought to have a mind to have confidence in the Christ that's in a person's heart. If we lived right, done right, our daughters and our sons wouldn't have so much trouble. Our families wouldn't have so much trouble. We wouldn't have so much trouble with the neighbors. God would provide everything that we needed just on the strength of the fact that we had the right kind of mind and the right kind of attitude. That's why that sons and daughters have so much trouble in their marriage as newlyweds is because they've got the mind of their daddy and mama and it ain't nothing but a warfare. And they have to come together and try to get together in the mind of the Lord Jesus before God can ever make them of one mind and one accord to where they can get along. Otherwise, a good couple would bust all to pieces and both of them die and go to hell by getting mixed up in two or three marriages. That's the truth. I see numbers of boys and girls. I see numbers of young people. I see numbers of young marriages just bust all to pieces because they've got the mind of their daddy and mother, and their daddy and mother's always trying to advise them. And this side of the family over here says, bless God, I wouldn't let him do that. And they say, bless God, I wouldn't let her do that. And it's just a continual riffraff all the time when both families on either side of every one of them needs to keep their nose out of their business. They're married. They've got their own lives. They've got their own families. And you don't need to indoctrinate them with nothing. Let them get along. There's one thing I try to do, and that's stay out of the business of my son-in-laws and daughters or daughter-in-laws and whatnot. I try to stay out of their business. When they come to me to ask me about this or that, I don't give them my opinion. I tell them what the Bible said. They come and they say, well, what about so-and-so and so-and-so? I say, well, the only thing I know the Bible says. And then if they want to cross up the Bible, then let God lay the leather on their hide, so to speak, and then they'll straighten out. I don't mess with their business, and I don't want them messing with my business. I feel that if we get the right mind, and we don't dabble in everybody else's business. Paul said there's people that are busybodies. That's what he called them. He said there's some mouths that ought to be stopped. And then he said some of them are just plain busybodies. In other words, they meddle in everybody's affair because they don't have a mind to work. They have a mind to meddle. They don't have a mind to pray or a mind to fast or a mind to give. They have a mind to complain, a mind to gossip. They don't seek the things that have virtue in them. Like whatever Paul spoke of there, he said, if anything have any virtue in it, whatever it might be, whether it be literature, praying, doing something for somebody or something pure and holy, he said, think on these. They don't do that. They've got a mind to meddle, a mind to gossip, a mind to backbite, a mind to want to advise everybody when they need some advice themselves. When they need a mind of charity, a mind of love, a mind of humility. The Bible said be clothed with humility. God gives more grace to the humble. If you want to get some grace from God, get humble. Don't be a lady that wanders from house to house, all over the campground, into the commissary, into the neighbors, into the pastor's home, and everywhere else just with a long tongue of gossiping all the time. Don't do that. And you men, don't be somebody, every time you get one brother over here, you try to put a wedge between him and another brother. Don't try to do that. One of these days, God will get you. The Bible said, mark them that cause division among you, and God will get you. You cause division among the brethren, it's one of the seven things that God hated. And you cause that, and the first news you know, God will get you. You talk about the wrong things on your job and try to indoctrinate brethren on your job out there, and the first news you know, you won't have a job. God will take it away from you. You be a tail bearer and run up and down the road and run from town to town or city to city or state to state and carry on some kind of gossip and tear down and try to blackball everything we're doing here in the eyes of the people. And the first news you know, God will leave you out on the highway somewhere and they'll be scraping you up. God said, beware, if you forget me, I'll tear you into pieces. So, I believe that we ought to acknowledge God in all of our ways, that God might direct our path. I was telling the brethren yesterday, this is my way of serving God. This is my feeling toward Christ. I was going to build this building down here. And it come to me, build your building 90 by 40. And I thought, all right, we'll build a building 90 by 40. I prayed over it. I talked to God about it. I thought I'd build a building 90 by 40. When I got down there and I looked at the building, they laid it off. And as I began to look at it, I thought, now, this is going to be a nice building. It'll take care of what we want. And I'll just add about 10 feet over here on this end of it. So I was on the verge of telling Brother Littlejohn that we was going to stretch out just a little bit, you know, either back or front. And something said to me, said, the building is to be 90 by 40. And I just shook it off like that because I was busy and my kind of in a tailspin in my mind anyway. Wasn't paying too good of attention, and sometimes we get dull of hearing, knowing that Ralph's going to need a little more in the commissary. I'm going to need a little more in the school and different things. I'll add a few feet over here. And something said, the building is to be 90 by 40. And then all of a sudden, a fear come over me. And I said, oh my Lord. God, I said, we build it 90 by 40. Whatever you say, we'll just build it 90 by 40. It won't add nothing to it. Now later on, he might let me add to the end of it, add to the back of it. But to now, he's got a purpose. I don't know what the purpose is, but he had a purpose for us to lay the thing off 90 by 40, and that must have been what he wanted, because he let me know that wasn't, he didn't want anything else. Now somebody said, well, Brother Pike, you just got that in your mind, got to believe in it. Well, whatever it is, if I just got to believe in it, that's still the way it is. That's the way that I'm going to try to do it, because that's the way he gave it to me. Now this is the way I feel. You brethren and you sisters know for a truth that numbers of times you started to do something, numbers of times you started to visit your relatives, numbers of times you drawed back from giving to God, and God spoke to you and told you not to do it. Or to do it, is that right? He did it, but you didn't listen at him. You pushed on over. And some of you right now are having trouble in your homes. Some of you having trouble in your bodies, and some of you having trouble with your financial end of it because of what you did, not because of what I did or somebody else did. That's not it at all. Susie, she couldn't go to a certain place. Susie got all upset, and she just kind of flew into a temper tantrum. And I said, now look, Susie, you can't go. Your mother said you can't go. You can't go. Susie didn't understand. She thought, well, why can't I go? I said, Susie, don't you want to live for God? She didn't see where I had anything to do with it. Her mother ought to let her go. I said, but now wait a minute, Susie. I said, supposing God prepared your mother's heart to tell you not to go. The preparation of man's heart is from God. Prepared a heart to tell you not to go, so that God could test you and see whether you're going to be faithful toward him or not, or whether you're going to pitch a fit over having your way. I said, supposing it was like that. Well, she simmered down a little bit because she knows that the preparation of man's heart is from God. So then it began to get peaceful. My wife seemed to be in harmony with me, and I turned and said something to my wife That didn't suit my wife, and my wife began to get disturbed about it. And it was a little harder for her to see what Susie was told. She thought that whatever it was out of balance according to her thinking. I said, wait just a minute, Betty. I said, supposing God prepared my heart like that to see whether you're going to go right with him or not, or have your way, or honor and obey your husband. You see what I'm saying? If something goes wrong in your home, if something goes wrong with your finance, if something goes wrong in your body, if something is out of sorts, you can't blame somebody else with it. It's God putting you to the test. Because the Bible said in one place over there, he said in that day that he'd put him to the test. He said, I'll set mother-in-law against daughter-in-law and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. And I'll do this to test them and see if I'm more worthy than their cause or their desires in their eyes, to see if they're worthy for the kingdom of God. Think not that I've come to bring peace, he said, but rather a sword. One shall be against another, two or three in the house, all of them against one another. He said, I've done this. I put a sword in the midst of you so that I could try you to see if you're worthy of the kingdom of God. A lot of times, it's like David of old, when the man cursed David, one of his servants said, well, I'll take his head off for that. And David said, you can't do that. So there's some reason. I've done something. David knew his guilt. David knew something was wrong. He said, you can't do that. There's a reason for it. If you've got troubles, there's a reason for it. The Bible said in the day of adversity, consider. Didn't say consider the church. Didn't say consider Brother Hollis. Didn't say consider Brother Lyman, but said consider your ways. If your ways please God, he maketh Brother Hollis to be at peace with you, Brother Lyman to be at peace with you, Brother Pike to be at peace with you. If your ways please God, he make your enemies to be at peace with you. He said to consider your ways. But you know what we want to do? When we have a problem, we want to consider everybody, everything they've said, everything they've done to us, and we want to consider it according, we want to have an evaluation according to our own carnal or intellectual reasoning. And we always jump the track. Now, if you got trouble on your job, you're to blame. If you got trouble with your finance, you're to blame. If you got trouble with your credit status, you're to blame. If you got trouble with the police, you're to blame. If you got trouble with the wife, the neighbors, the children, whatever it might be, you are to blame. God did it. God's the one that did it. When old brother Job had trouble with his children, Job was to blame. Somebody said, well, Job didn't do nothing wrong. The Bible said he didn't do nothing wrong. Where'd you read that in the Bible? It didn't say nothing about Job not doing anything wrong. You say, but the Bible said Job was a perfect man, Brother Pye. A man can be a perfect man and make just a buku of mistakes. I believe that God has made us a perfect man. The Bible said he's perfected forever them that are sanctified. But some of us show to make a mess sometimes. God said Job was a perfect man, looking at him through the blood. He was a perfect, upright man. He tried to do what was right. But when God came face to face with old brother Job, Job said, Lord, I've sinned. In other words, he tried to blame everybody with his problem. But when he came to the word, he had to look at his own self and admit that he was to blame for it. Now, God ain't never done nobody no injustice. God said to Job, shall a man be more righteous than God? Job, you tell me that I'm mistreating you. You tell me I'm doing this thing when you don't deserve it. And old Job began to gird up his loins and begin to get straightened out. Folks, there's nothing happened to you but what you didn't deserve it. I never had nothing to happen to me in my life but what I didn't deserve it. And I want you to know I've had some things that broke my heart, that tore me to pieces. I'll never get over it. I got scars and wounds that'll never heal up. But I was to blame. I gave place to the devil. I done something somewhere. I wasn't wise in what I did, or somewhere or another, I got off key enough to let the devil get a lick at me. That's exactly what you're doing. The Bible said don't give place to him, and that's exactly what you're doing. Give me a few more minutes, and I'm going to close. Let me say something. A lot of the young boys that are married, a lot of the young girls that are married, some of them are having trouble hand over fist. You know why? Because they were so stubborn and rebellious. When I tried to preach to them and tell them, I told them, I said, before you marry now, you young folks better listen at me. I said, if you don't, it's all going to come out in the wash. I said, someday when you marry, you're just going to have a wife for a sore thumb, or a husband for a sore thumb, or wind up putting your baby in a casket. Somebody said, bless God, I could care less. I ain't married. I don't know that I'll ever get married. But that's the wrong attitude, folks. It's the wrong attitude. It's not so good when when you're a young fellow, you can just walk off and blow your top, or the wife can blow her top, that is, a young girl can, walk off and leave it with the mom and daddy and just let it go. But when you get married, you don't walk off so easy, do you? You get that husband upset enough, he'll slap you slap over the bed. And you get the wife upset enough, she'll put poison in your biscuits if she cooks you any. Somebody said, I don't believe it. Well, it's happened a lot of times. Somebody said, but that never would happen to me. I don't know about that. I'll tell you what, we've got some good ones around here. That's right. We got some that needs to be born again. If they get born again, they'll be all right. But as long as they're in the condition they are, like they are now, I wouldn't care too much about eating their biscuits if they were upset. The Bible said, if you're hungry, eat at home. And I find that a good practice. As long as your wife stays all right. I never will forget a friend of mine. He left his wife, just a young couple. He left her. And I said, man, what's the matter with you? He said, she said she's going to poison me. And I believe it. He said, I'm leaving. So he left and went and married another woman. Now, how do you understand what I'm saying? The right frame of mind will bring you happiness. If a couple will get the right frame of mind, and mamas and daddies don't mess with it, don't tear it up, they'll be all right. Leave them alone. Somebody said, well, they can't get along without us. When you die, you'll find out they get along without you. That's right, my dad is dead. I'm getting along without him. I appreciate him being here. He was one of the greatest that ever lived. But I'm getting along without him. Let them learn to lean on God and stop leaning on daddy and mama. You daddy, stop making your smart remarks. Mama, stop making your smart remarks. Because that ain't nothing but a devil that's got a hold of the young'uns to cause mama and daddy to get tore up to reproach what I'm doing to come back to the minister. That's what it's all for. It's to smite the shepherd that the sheep might be scattered. That's what it's for. It's just to get a stink going. If you'll leave them alone, they'll get straightened out after a while. Somebody said, bless God, I'm going to straighten that old son-in-law out. No, you ain't. The best thing you can do is leave that old son-in-law alone. I had an uncle that got a knife hung in his face, ripped all to pieces because he meddled in his son-in-law and daughter's business. The man got mad, hung a knife in him. My uncle was the kind of fellow, he'd shot a man, and he's kind of fellow that he just wasn't afraid. But he run across another fellow that wasn't afraid either. And the man run up to him and took a hawk blade knife with lead on the end of it and screamed out in his face and said, you're a man just like I'm a man, and popped him up there. And when he did, it dazed him and he hung a knife at him like to cut him to death. The best thing you can do is leave him alone. Now, I know that if a son-in-law jumped on your daughter and beat her up, got drunk and that kind of thing, I'd be willing to get a knife hung in my face and in my belly to go down there and get her. I would. God give me grace, I'd go after her. Son-in-law, no son-in-law. I'd get her. Now, unless she left me laying on the floor somewhere, I'd get her. Now, let me tell you something. Every time there's a dispute, every time there's some little something come up, you can't do that. And as far as worrying about the daughter hurting the son, she ain't going to do much of that. Like I said, if she really is, besides, she might scratch him and bite him and claw him and slap him. If she don't do that, she's about the first one in the congregation that ain't done it. I said, if she don't do it, she's about the first one that I know of that ain't done it. And I said, well, he can't do my son like that. Well, what come you done his daddy like that? That's the way you did his daddy. So then, just leave him alone. They'll be all right. Talk to them, tell them the love of God, show them the right way, help them. Don't try to run their business. They're a man and a woman now. Let them go their own way. Same way with the church. Don't try to make the preacher run it like you want it. Let him run it like God tells him to run it. If he listened to some of you, he'd liable to wreck the whole ship. If I'd have listened to some of you brethren and told me what to do, we'd all be in a terrible mess now. But as long as I can trust God, as long as I can talk to God, as long as I can do what God tells me, I'm all right. Now, I admire the fact that we could come together, get in the mind of God in the men's meeting, and a lot of you brethren come up with something that makes good sense. And a lot of times, I incorporate it in what I'm doing because I know it's the voice of God. I know it's wisdom. But a lot of you just make a lot of noise. You just talk all the time, and when you get through, you haven't said anything. But some of you don't say a whole lot, but when you do say it, you've done a little thinking over it, and you've kind of got some kinks out of it, and it makes sense, and a lot of times it can help the cause of Christ. Some of you talk 15 times in one meeting and don't say 15 cents worth. Some people say something two or three times in a meeting and say something that's worth more than all the meeting put together, all the discussion. Wisdom, the right mind. We need the right mind, brethren. They had a mind to work and they build back the walls. Now, there's a lot could be preached on this. We could go back in history in 45 B.C., Nia Sinai, and bring up what really happened back there in the building of those walls and get into a revelation here. But I'm talking to you about a mind this morning. I feel like we need to be in the right frame of mind. If you stay in the right frame of mind, you're not going to be all tore up all the time. Some people are afraid. They're just afraid of the shatter, afraid of everything. I know a little girl down in Alabama, a good little kid, but she was afraid to go up the steps. They had to help her up the steps. She's afraid to climb the steps. She was bound with a demon of fear. Now, what causes this in a grown-up's life? The Bible said, he that feareth is not made perfect in love. When a person's afraid of everything, it's because their heart's not right with God. They've got deceit in their heart. Perfect love casts out fear. And he that feareth is not made perfect in love. A lot of you ladies that fear, a lot of you men that fear, it's because you don't have the love of God. It's because you're not made perfect in love. It's because you got deceit. You're working something on the side, and condemnation makes you afraid. I tell you something, brother. If you got God, you're not afraid. You're not afraid of the devil. You're not afraid of mankind. You're not afraid of sickness. You're not afraid of death. You're not afraid of responsibility. Not afraid of poverty. You're not afraid of anything. Storms, tornadoes, you're not afraid of anything. You know why? David said, my heart is fixed. Evil tidings shall not trouble me. God said, son, you're a man after my own heart. You got a fixed heart. That's the way Christ's heart was. It was fixed. Full of love. Private that love. I don't want you to stand with me. You know, a lot of people take this outlook. They say, well, I've been to Brother Pike, and I've been to Brother Gary, and I've been to Brother Lyman, and I've been to this brother over the hill, and Brother Roberts, and this brother and that brother, and nobody just can't help me. Said, my case is just so nobody can't help me. And that's true. Nobody can't help you because you won't let nobody help you. When you go to talk with Brother Pike and the others, you got your mind made up and you know exactly what you're going to do and how far you're going to commit yourself, how much you're going to let down the gap, and you got all figured out just exactly how far you're going and what you're going to believe, how much of it you're going to accept, and just how far you're going to go with Brother Pike. And then the rest of it you got up here in a little file called data laying over here somewhere. And you're going to pull it out in case Brother Pike goes too far. But I'll tell you what, if you come to Brother Pike or any other son of God or daughter of God, if you come in the right spirit, the right attitude, they can help you. These young folks that's got marriage problems, they feel like, well, can't nobody help us? Nobody can help you. As long as the boy's willing to slap the woman around and treat her, talk to her like a dog, and the woman's willing to sell up like an old cat somewhere on a log and scratch at him, can't nobody help you. Ain't nobody going to be able to help you as far as humanity. But I'll tell you what, when God gets through beating you black and blue, putting you through a spiritual process, and they pick you up on the highway somewhere out of a wreck, you say, oh, they wouldn't do that. Hey, they've done it to me. I've had numbers of wrecks. I've turned over and run into the ditch and into the telephone post, and I've had to climb up on the side of the car and pull me and my wife and children, all of us, out of it. I had numbers of bad wrecks. Don't you ever think God won't do it? A lot of folks like Brother Branham being killed. I'm just fortunate. God just helped me, that's all. He could have let the same thing happen to me that happened to Brother Branham. He might let it happen someday. I don't know. He does whatever he wants to. But I've been in numbers of wrecks where they leave the road, turn over, and then turn back up on their wheels. Numbers of wrecks, run to cars and all kinds of things. Just barely escape with the skin of my teeth a lot of times. When God gets through with you, he'll teach you that they that wait upon the Lord's in better shape. God can teach you. He can teach you. We've had a few wrecks around here where some of them didn't listen to us. I've had them to get upset at me and get in the car and go right off and had a wreck. I can think of three wrecks that quick right here. It doesn't happen here. More than that, but just three right offhand where people didn't do what I told them, was arrogant toward me. Four, nothing didn't come to mind right there. That where this arrogant wouldn't listen to what I said, went right off and had a wreck. So then the Lord will chasten them that he loves. But don't play around with him. If you are a woman and you've committed yourself to a man, you married that man, you are to obey that man. You are to never obey your mother and daddy again as long as you live, unless it's in harmony with what your husband says. Now you can say amen or oh me. And that man that made a commitment to that woman, the Bible said he is to forsake mother and daddy and everyone else and cleave to his wife and not listen at nothing they say anymore if it's going to injure or be harmful to his wife. That's the way the book reads. Now, anybody crossing those boundaries is trespassing. You're on another man's property. Somebody said, it's my son and it's my daughter. And that's true. It's like my Cindy sitting up here. She's still my daughter and I love her very dearly. But she belongs to this man standing right here. She's flesh of his flesh and bone of his bone. She belongs to him. He's her head. And she's got to obey him. And sometimes they go round and round. But nevertheless, Cindy knows it's right. And she knows she's going to have to do it. And I believe Ralph ought to love her like Christ loved the church and be concerned about her. And I don't think it's my job to go down there and interfere in his home and say, see here, young fellow, you're supposed to love her like Christ loved the church, and I don't like the way you're treating her. And every time Cindy gets upset, and she does it sometime, and she comes up to the house and has a talk with me and her mother, it's not my job to jump headlong on Ralph and blame him with everything when Cindy's partly to blame and sometime might be all to blame. You say, how do you know? Because I lived with Cindy a long time. I think she's one of the grandest people in the world, but sometimes she gets out of sorts. I think Ralph is one of the grandest son-in-laws. I've got some of the grandest son-in-laws and daughters, I think, daughter-in-laws that anybody could have. I really feel that. And I'm very grateful. But folks, give them a break. Give our young people a break. For Christ's sake, give them a break. Young man, don't talk about running off leaving your wife. The Bible said God hateth putting away. Therefore, don't deal treacherously with your wife. He hates that thing. You put that little wife away and God will despise you in his sight. He'll kill you or tear you to pieces or let you wind up in some kind of marriage with a woman that's a sorry out yonder that you'd give your right arm to get loose from her. And wives, listen to your husband. Don't listen to somebody else. Don't listen to your relatives. Whatever you do, you forget about daddy and mama, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors. You listen to your husband. Whatever he says, that is it. It doesn't matter what anybody else says. And if you haven't come that far, then you need to get born again and need to get straightened out because you're not a real wife to him. In the day of the judgment, when God judges you, he'll judge you without a head and you'll be lost because he's the savior of the body. And the only way a woman can be saved is to be in harmony with her head. So you better have the right frame of mind toward him. And he better have the right frame of mind toward you. And it's good to get all the wrinkles ironed out before children come. Don't you just terrorize their little hearts and keep them tore up all the time. All right, let's sing a little chorus together. Let's sing the little chorus. We'll give the glory to Jesus, Eddie. And we'll give all the glory to Jesus. We'll sing about his love. We'll sing about his love. And we'll give all the glory to Jesus. And we'll sing of his wonderful love. Sing it again. And we'll give all the glory to Jesus. We'll sing about his love.
We'll sing about His love, and we'll give all the glory to Jesus, and we'll sing of His wonderful love.
You know, speaking of our young married couples, my heart goes out to them. I read they had hundreds of marriages in a city. And out of that, almost every one of them divorced. Hundreds of them. You can't imagine what kind of condition our youth is in. One city, one hospital, 3,500 abortions. That's mass murder. Our young people, our young married couples, a wife that's a real wife to a husband, she will go anywhere he wants to go. It don't make any difference. Unless he goes to a beer joint or something to where it's against the conviction of her heart in salvation. Don't make no difference where it's at. If he wants to go to Canada, India, Africa, anywhere, if she is a real wife, she'll go with him. If she don't go with him, she cannot go to heaven. There's no way that she'll ever make it into the kingdom of God because she's in open violation of the word. I honestly believe in my heart that a young man ought to be careful with a young woman. Now, if she's just married to him, he ought to go easy with her because she's been with her daddy all her life. And she's just getting acquainted with him and got to learn some confidence in him and learn she can trust him, learn that he loves him, learn he's the right kind of person. And I think that you ought to be easy with him and give him a break. Now, that's the way I feel about it. Now, I don't mean for 2 or 3 years that she's got to be dragging on mama's apron string. I don't mean that kind of thing. She's got to stay at mama's house all the time. I don't believe that. Now, to me, that ain't no wife. But I do believe in the first few months of the marriage, there ought to be a little consideration. And I don't mean by that she ought to be at home all the time. That ain't what I'm saying. I don't want to create a problem for you. I don't think she ought to be at home. I think she ought to stay at her own home. But I think you ought to be easy with her and work with her. You can't run see mom and daddy every day in the week, but you can kind of work along with her a little bit until she kind of understands, until she gets a little confidence in you, and knows that you love her and care for her. And it don't hurt after a few months to still let her know that you want to stand by her, that you're not just pouting up and wanting your way. I can't hardly stand somebody, Brother Hollis, that in the church or in a home where there's a man or woman that's just got an old pouty spirit, they just got to have their way. They ain't going to have it no way but their way. A man will say, bless God, I'm the head of this house. You're not the head of the house. Anybody with that kind of attitude ain't the head of nothing. Except a problem. You're a problem to yourself. That ain't the right kind of attitude. That ain't the right attitude at all. And it ain't the right attitude for a young girl to say, bless God, if you love me, you'll take me to see mama. That ain't the right attitude either. But the right attitude is for you to sit down with your wife and just tell her. Say, now, honey, I love you. You're bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. And I don't want to hurt you. I wouldn't hurt you for nothing because you mean everything to me. And I love you and I want to do what's right. But you got to realize that I'm the head of the house. You got to understand that God made me the head. I got a responsibility to God. And you're supposed to obey me in all things and honor and reverence me. Have a respect for me. Have a reverence for me. As the head of the house. For how's the children going to respect the dad if the mama don't respect him? That's the reason the children don't respect him today. Because mother ain't got no respect for him and they know it. That's why the children don't respect mother. Because daddy ain't got no respect for her. I know there's sometimes that you have to raise your voice. A lot of folks say, well, I don't think the man ought to raise his voice at his wife. Well, it don't make no difference whether he does or not. She's going to raise hers 50 times a year or more. Whether he ever raises his or not, she's going to raise it at him.
But nevertheless, he's supposed to raise his voice and command his household after him. If it comes to something that he knows in his heart it's not right, it's detrimental to him and his family, what he's trying to do financially hurt him financially or in some way, and I'm going to let you go in just a minute. You can sit down, forgive me. If it's going to be detrimental to him, then he's supposed to put his foot down and say, honey, it ain't going to be that way. I don't care if you stand on your head, we're not going to do it. That's it. And he's supposed to stay right there. He ain't supposed to give no ground at all. If he does, he's in trouble with God. If he listens to that wife, he's in trouble with God. But now, if it's a matter of something he wants to do, maybe he wants to go over here and sit under an oak tree, and she'd rather sit under an elm tree. It's just a matter of sitting under the tree, which tree? Then he ought to be willing to discuss it with her. It might be a better shade under the elm tree anyway. He ought to talk with her a little while about it. It's just a personal desire anyway. If it comes right down to it, he's got a right to put his foot down and say, no, we're not going to sit under the elm tree, we're going to sit under the oak tree. But you can be sure that the way you dish it out to her, that's the way God's going to feed you out of the same spoon. When God gets ready to do something, you could get a hold to a little something that would be bright in your life. God will say, no, it's going to be under the oak tree, just like you want it. So you just treat her like you want God to treat you, because that's the way he's going to treat you. So when it comes to optional things, I think you ought to give a little ground. Work together a little bit. All right? Let's stand together one more time. A lot of times I give a little ground with my children. I give too much ground sometimes. And I find out that I've been better off for having to give so much ground. But I try to give ground to them to help them a little bit. And then a lot of times it winds up with a snare, and you can go too far with the wife and wind up in trouble. But there's a right way and there's a wrong way. And as the song said, I want to go the way of the Lord. Let's sing that little chorus again and we'll be dismissed. We'll sing that little chorus again, Eddie. We'll give the glory to Jesus. And we'll give all the glory to Jesus. We'll sing about his love. We'll sing about his love. And we'll give all the glory to Jesus. And we'll sing of his wonderful love. Sing it one more time. And we'll give.